Have you ever wondered what life's like for a family with a profoundly disabled child? I know that I've brought on a couple of guests who are dear friends of mine, and we've tried to open the doors to our homes and our hearts. But today, I am bringing to you somebody who is so dear to me. She is going to talk to us about what it looks like when a family refuses to adopt a victim mentality around their child and their life circumstances. She's going to discuss how do we survive after our child has passed on, which is so unnatural in our humanity. That is not normal for parents to be the ones left behind. So today, I'm really excited to bring to you a story of hope, of family unity, despite the deepest trials and heartbreak. I'm excited to introduce you to this beautiful family who has had exemplary resilience that's just been wrapped in joy and love and compassion for others, while fully relying on Jesus for strength. So grab your tissues and get ready to feel seen and to feel understood by my precious friend who has walked through the fire. I've kept this episode full length intentionally. It's a long episode, but there was just no way I could cut this into two parts. I pray that you will be willing to consider who in your community is a special needs family that would benefit from this episode, from knowing that there are others out there who have walked through the deep waters and the dark clouds, but have come out able to bring joy and light and hope to those who are still struggling. So please consider who you might share this with, and let's jump into this amazing conversation. Hey mamas, welcome to Her Home and Heart podcast. Do you want balance in your home life and peace in your heart at the end of each long day? Do you want to let go of feelings of failure because you've yelled at the kids again despite promising yourself and God you'd stop? I'm Katie. I'm a homeschooling mom who also had little kids and wanted to create a thriving home environment. In this podcast, you'll find resources for holistic living, heart connection with your family, and homeschooling so that you won't wake up to regret one day. Even if you have outside-the-box learners or your own health challenges, you'll find support here. Breathe deeply, grab a coffee, and let the kids go play, because it's time for you to find peace and fulfillment that you've been longing for. Let's go. Welcome, everyone. This week, we have my longtime precious friend, Stephanie Weinberg, with us to share her story. She is the mother of a beautiful daughter who had Aicardi Goutier-Gaultier syndrome, and she is the president of the Aicardi Goutier-Gaultier syndrome advocacy association. She's also a military veteran spouse and an elementary educator. Stephanie, thank you so much for being here with Steve and I this week.
Well, thank you guys for asking me. I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, we watched and just sat in awe for so many years over your story with Abby and how your family just managed to be such a testimony of love and grace, even in the middle of so much hardship and ache. And so we'd love for you to share your story and the story of Abby and your family.
Yes. So they said we're a military family, and Abby was born in 2002 when we were stationed in Wichita Falls at Shepherd Air Force Base. And we took her in for her, 2-month well baby visit. And I just kept telling the doctor, something is not right. This kid cries all the time. And when the doctor happened to walk in, she was pushing back and just letting her head hang. And he said, does she do this? And I said, all the time. And that started, okay, we need to get a CAT scan done. We need to get some blood work done because that isn't normal. And so I was thankful that somebody was finally taking me seriously, that, 2 months of a baby crying is not okay. And because we were in the Air Force, we got sent down to San Antonio to Lackland Air Force Base, because that's where the big military hospital was. We started, they did MRIs and basically told us that about 60% of Abby's brain was damaged. They thought at the time it was something called congenital CMV, and started running tests and doing other things to kind of try to nail down a diagnosis. But, they basically told us she was brain damaged. She would not live past the first year of life. And then quarterly, we started traveling from Wichita Falls to San Antonio to have medical appointments with developmental pediatricians, neurology, physical medicine, ophthalmology, and all of those things just kind of started happening. I will say the good thing about the military at that point was when Dave was due for orders the next time, they made sure they sent us to a town that had a children's hospital within 30 miles of where we were stationed.
I'd be remiss to mention that you also have a gorgeous daughter, Riley. And so you weren't just focused only on Abby. You also have another beautiful daughter in the mix during this time.
Yes. So Riley was 3 and a half when we found out that Abby had brain damage. And I remember her sitting in the car and she asked me, is it okay if I be a mommy before I be a doctor? You know, and I was like, well, why do you want to be a doctor? And she said, well, I want to make Abby feel better. And I said, well, honey, you know, Abby's going to be grown up when you're grown up. And she said, well, I can make other people feel better. You know, and it was just like she knew that there was something that Abby needed. And at the time, you know, we were traveling back and forth. Riley's 3 and a half. So we bought season passes to SeaWorld because we thought, okay, in between appointments, we're going to do something to make life normal for Riley. Right. You know, mm-hmm. So we would pop over to SeaWorld or go for a ride on the train at the zoo or something just to get out of the hospital and out of that TLF facility, you know. And so, you know, we still had a lot of unknowns. I knew that, okay, I want therapy for my child because I knew that early intervention would be important. And we didn't have a diagnosis. And so I'm like, isn't brain damage enough? You know, they're like, no, we need a name for, you know, for this. And Abby had genetic testing at Texas Tech in 2004. And it showed zero results. And for our country being as rich and medically advanced as we think we are, there was not a genetic test for her condition in 2004. In fact, it took until 2012 for that to happen in the United States. So, you know, after we kind of got through that initial, there's something wrong, and they put Abby on a medication, they said, so that I could sleep, because the only way she would sleep was up against my chest. You know, and it was the whole back to sleep thing. She was always just had to be tummy. You know, they gave us this medication. And at that point, when Dave and I were going to go pick it up, Wayne Watson's When God's People Pray happened to be playing on the radio in the car. And we just thought, you know, that's what we need. Luckily, again, the advantage of being in the military, there were people all over the world that we could reach out to and say, we need you to pray. We just, you know, we know Abby has brain damage. We don't know what's ahead of us. And so, you know, we instantly turned it over to prayer, which calmed us. And, you know, I just think about too, like God had my sister at our house at that time to be there to watch Riley while we were kind of going back and forth to things with Abby. And after the developmental pediatrician told us, you've got to get out of that small town. It's not safe for your child. And so, of course, we enrolled in the Exceptional Family Member Program through the military, which put us after Texas to Illinois. So we were stationed at Scott Air Force Base, and Abby got care at St. Louis Children's Hospital. And by this time, she's 3 years old. She's getting ready to start school. And they told us she had cerebral palsy, you know, after she survived the cytomegalovirus, you know, 1 year of life diagnosis they had given us. Her neurologist at St. Louis Children's Hospital had cerebral palsy, and she said, this is not CP. So we started looking for mitochondrial diseases. They did a muscle biopsy that yielded no results. And so finally, she said, there's a doctor over at Leeds University in England by the name of Yannick Crow, and he's doing a research study into this genetic condition. Would you consider sending Abby's blood? I'm like, yes. Absolutely. So we sent her blood over to England. Dave was just getting ready to go to South Korea for a year. And so we got the results that Abby was 5 and a half years old before we had an answer to what she had. And this doctor reached out to us, and, you know, they asked us to send blood work over for his study to see, you know, how the genetics were working. And so we got that done right before Dave left to go overseas. They saw something, you know, in his blood and something in mine that they hadn't seen before, but expected disrupted her genetic code. And so that was the first time we'd heard about AGS or Aicardi-Goutier syndrome. It didn't really change the way we were treating her at the time, but to have a name for it, you know, was nice. But again, we're talking 2007, end of 2007, beginning of 2008. So again, there's no genetic studies in the United States. There's nobody really researching it. And when you would go to the emergency room and tell the doctors this is what she'd have, the response was, oh, I'm going to have to Google that. That's frightening to hear. You know, like doctors didn't even know. And I feel like the more landlocked that doctors are, the less educated they are about these rare diseases, because you don't have the big universities and the money to do the research. And it just trickles into the middle of the country much slower than hospitals on the coast do, I feel like.
Yeah. So during all of this, you were managing two kiddos, military moves, a husband who's gone, and not having the right medical support. Now, I know that when I met you a few years later, something that always stood out to me is that you are always smiling. You have this joy about you that has endlessly encouraged me, brought me hope when I was struggling. And so how do you do that, Stephanie? Because I know it couldn't have all been happiness inside of you while you're going through all of this hardship.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you think that you're relying on God through day-to-day life. And Abby definitely helped us reprioritize what was truly important. You know, most of the days when she was younger, it was okay to go day by day. As she progressed in her disease, it was hour by hour and then minute by minute. You know, so the stress increased as her age increased as well. But also the other side of, you know, doing that is if you don't rely on God to get through that day, then what are you going to do? You know, I mean, I know so many times it was just the strength from him to get, you know, like you said, to get me out of bed, to get me to do, get the girls to school, you know, go and teach for a day. And I feel like teaching, though, is my escape from the special needs world. You know, I really feel like that is my calling. And that's how I met you all, was I got to be the teacher for your two oldest kids at a small school in Maryland, you know. So, yeah, I think like teaching is my way to kind of escape the special needs world, you know. I always had my phone right with me. And I feel like the other kind of thing that's maybe not fair to military families, and I know you guys have experienced this too, is that every time you move to a new state, and it's not your choice to move to that state, your husband is forced to move because of his job, your child who has special needs gets pushed to the bottom of a state's waiting list for nursing services. And like for Abby, you know, she was, I felt like, severe enough, we could have used help, but we did not receive nursing services until 2013, which meant she was 11 and a half years old before we received any help. So we were doing it by ourselves, sleep deprived. You know, it's like a constant newborn. You're up every couple of hours. You don't know what's hurting them because they can't tell you. You're guessing, oh, let me try Tylenol first, see if that relieves it. If not, we'll try Motrin. If that doesn't help, then, and things are continuing to escalate, you go to the emergency room because there's got to be an infection or something going on that you can't see. So it was a lot of not knowing and maybe looking like the crazy mom, because despite what Abby was feeling in her body, she would constantly smile too. You know, she radiated that joy. That was the one thing she could do.
Yeah, she and so, did.
Yeah. And even in the emergency room, you know, it didn't matter. Most of the times it didn't matter when she was little, she was still smiling, even though she was battling infections or whatever was going on in her little body, you know? And so I just always erred on the side of caution. Like, I don't care if they think I'm crazy, I'm taking her in because I needed to know that she was okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember the years where you were still single-handedly, even if Dave was gone, having to carry her up and down to flight, the upstairs, downstairs house, in and out of the car. You didn't even have a modified vehicle, and that was a really big effort for you guys to be able to get hold of a modified vehicle. And watching your journey and watching the community support, and then sometimes the lack of community support
Right.
was just, I don't know. There was something about that that just struck me so deeply. And you guys always just carried it with so much grace and such a testimony to how you walked side by side with Jesus through all of this. I remember you guys having to do life flights for seizures.
Yes.
I mean, your journey was not easy.
Yeah, and we're part of a life group here, and we were just talking about those kind of Jonah moments in your life where you just feel like you're, and I brought up the very first time that we had to get in a helicopter and fly to Children's Hospital. I'm so thankful that out in the DC area there are so many options of helicopters to call, that you can quickly get from Southern Maryland to the hospital in DC in at 12 minutes. I timed it. And the utmost, like, scariest, that was definitely one of the scariest moments in her life, is watching. They basically, there was a painted line on the floor. Mom, do not cross this line. Everybody, from the hospital gets that call. They rush into the room, probably 15 people. I couldn't even, like, supplies are flying everywhere. They're yelling things out, getting IVs. And I had such a great relationship with Abby's neurologist that I emailed them when we got in the helicopter, explained what was happening. And we're standing there in the emergency room. All of this is happening. And a nurse walks in and hands me the phone and goes, "It's Dr. Vanderver for you, Mom." And she got on the phone and she told me, "This is what's going to happen when you're in the emergency room. These are the steps that they have to take to get her stable. You're going to go to ICU because she's probably going to need a breathing tube, and she just, like, laid it all out because she knew me well enough to know where my head was going. And she was spot on, except they never had to give her a breathing tube. Abby's breathing was strong enough that they had it at the foot of her bed, but we never had to use it. She didn't open her eyes for 5 days because of the trauma to her brain and because of all the medication they gave her. But when Dave came to visit after work and he would talk to her, she would do this weak little smile, like she was there, but she just couldn't open her eyes. And that was scary because, we got out of the hospital, we went home, but because of all everything that happened, her digestion then got so messed up that we got right admitted back to the hospital the next day, So it was kind of like, oh, we're done with this, and we weren't. The team at Children's National in Washington, D.C. was really the reason why AGSAA, the advocacy group, even got started. They started hosting family conferences in 2008. So we were still living in Illinois at the time, but I flew out to D.C. with Abby. So I'm by myself flying with special needs kid, rental car, car seat, wheelchair, all of that. But there were just people along the journey. Like, there was this couple flying out of St. Louis, and they said, "Oh, well, we get off at the next terminal, but we're going to get off here, help you get to your gate, and then we're going to go get on our flight." They made sure. And just, like, people like that along the journey, and we never, like you said, we never really asked for help, but at a certain point we needed to. And so when Abby and I went on that trip and we finally, for the first time, met other families who were in the exact situation as us, it was like, wow, you're not alone, And I think that's one of the hugest things in a rare disease community is you're so isolated because you can't go to birthday parties or you can't go to events outside because it's too hot, too cold, because your child can't do that. It's not healthy for them. And so, like, to know that you weren't alone, and we met a very small group of families in 2008, and then at a conference again in 2012. And at that time, we were living out in Maryland, so it was easy to just drive there and go. And the conference had a few more families. And at that point, they were talking about how if parents don't stand up and advocate for the kids, scientists, they're not going to research it. what's the point? Like, it's not impacting anybody. Nobody's raising, you know, their voice about it. So it just kind of falls on the wayside. And so I thought, okay, this can't be happening, you know? And then Dr. Vanderwoer would email me or call me and say, hey, we have a newly diagnosed family. Would you mind reaching out to them? You know, and it just kind of became a natural thing. Like, okay, I'm going to tell parents it's not as bad as you think, you know, This is the normal progression of the disease that we've experienced. And so we were part of a law enforcement group out there, and I was trying to find a way to raise money and raise awareness. And there was a gentleman in our group who owned a screen printing shop and a trophy shop. So the motorcycle club donated the funds to order t-shirts, and Children's National gave us permission to use their logo. We started selling these t-shirts, you know, and it was just me. Like, none of the other parents wanted any part of this, you know, which is still very much difficult. Like, a lot of families don't know how to advocate beyond just their child and their doctors. Like, they don't look at the global, like, disease community. And I don't know why I did. I would have, like, I was a quiet, timid person before Abby, but, you know, tell me no about a wheelchair or a piece of equipment. Give me your supervisor. You know, like, I turned into this crazy fighting, advocating machine, you know. And Dave will say all the time, like, she was so quiet before Abby, but, you know, that changed the way she dealt with things. And so that kind of began the journey of just raising money and raising awareness. And now we've got an amazing team of other parents. Like, I had told them I needed to step down as president of AGS because, like, in the last years of Abby's life and the grief, like, I don't have it in me to do that. But they're like, you are the face of this disease. Everybody knows you, because it was, okay, Stephanie, can you reach out to this new family? They're in Texas, or they're, you know. And so I started doing that, and it just became, you know, so easy to kind of progress to those next steps. And, you know, we didn't really, like you said, ask for help until Abby's 10th birthday, when we needed a handicap accessible van. And I think, you know, the other part of that is you need to have community. You can't isolate yourself in these situations, because when you need help, people aren't willing to help because they don't know your story. You know, when we never hid Abby, I mean, she went kayaking, she went camping, she went, you know, whatever we did, she did. Amusement parks, vacations, whatever, you know. And looking back, like, when we looked at her slideshow, we were like, wow, she really did have a good life. You know, like, we gave her a lot of opportunities to be as normal as possible. And I think there's organizations now that do even a better job of that. Like, I just saw videos this past week of AGS kids surfing with a group of people that are, like, out on surfboards, you know. This one little girl in her wheelchair is like at a skate park doing wheelies in her wheelchair with other adult people that are teaching kids, like, hey, your wheelchair does not have to limit you, you know. And it's just like, there's other people out there now advocating for those normal parts of their lives, you know.
That's just so inspiring. And I hope a lot of folks who have kids or know people who have kids with really profound disability will take note, you know, try to get involved in the community of others who have a similar diagnosis, because you really can gain strength. You and Dave and Riley and Abby are, in my experience and Steve's experience too, very unique, because you guys stuck together like glue. You guys didn't fall into that category of families that divorced or had siblings of the special needs child who were bitter, because Riley is the opposite of bitter. She's always, in my opinion, just been the epitome of the most loving, compassionate sister. And, you know, what did you guys do that kept you together? Did you do anything specific?
Well, I mean, you know, we say that we have every reason to not still be married, because being military with deployments, remote tours, special needs, all of that. But I think, you know, a lot of it is our faith, and that because Dave was gone so much, that his time home was very precious, you know. And Riley, I mean, even now as an adult, she is working with autistic children, in Virginia. And people have told her, "You're so natural at this, like what kind of experience do you have with special needs kids?" And she's like, "My whole life, Granted, Abby couldn't talk and do those things, but it's just really cool to watch her now and see what she's doing. And she really has a love for adults, like the 18 to 21 year old age range. She has the most fun with that group of autistic kids. And it's just really cool to watch, and she's actually getting ready to move to Colorado, and she's looking at a job college that is to help kids with disabilities as a case manager to make sure they're getting all the services that they need, because she's also a case manager for students where she's at now. And so it's just really cool to see how her life, with Abby is progressing, into her own passions. And we always tried to not, we tried to make sure that Abby was not fully ever like Riley's responsibility. That, yes, you need a break to do something. So, hey, can you watch your sister while I go cut the grass or whatever? And so, yes, Riley would gladly do those things, but it was never a, okay, we're home. It's now your job to take care of her. That was never the case. Now, once she got older and like Dave and I wanted to go away for a weekend, she would gladly stay home and the nurses would come in and all of that, because she was doing the whole biomed thing in high school. So she was checking her blood pressure and doing all the things she was doing at school. And so, like, I know that she would take care of her and all of that, but it was never expected that she did that. And then, once we were in Maryland and we finally got nursing, that did allow Dave and I to have some time. Because her nursing hours initially were just like after work and in the evening until like bedtime. And then we ended up getting an overnight nurse. So really that gave us time in the evening if we wanted to go out for dinner or just to run an errand, because I mean, I can still show, I still have not deleted all of the alarms on my phone for medications and reminding myself, you got to stop running errands and get home because the nurse is leaving, because it, near the end of her life, it was we had nursing during the day so they could be with her at school so I could still work. And then as soon as work time was over, we didn't have a nurse. So from like 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., which is a lot of times busy. But again, Riley was older. She was off at college. So we didn't have other kids to worry about in that mix, So that schedule worked good for us. And then we could sleep at night. As much as you can, because you still hear the alarms and you hear noises downstairs and you're like, oh, should I go down? No, they've got it, But there were a couple times where it was just like God said, get out of bed and go downstairs, because I just in my heart knew that something wasn't right. And so you still didn't sleep great, but better knowing somebody else was watching her overnight. And then kind of to go back to the children's hospital thing and the advocacy part, moving forward, I had a student when I taught second grade at Grace Lutheran School who fell in love with Abby and was reading books to her. And we were talking about the whole fundraising thing, and we were going to do the 5K at Children's Hospital, and that helped to raise money. Well, young lady went to her grandma's house in Oregon over the summer and started collecting cans and telling people, I'm raising money for this little girl. And so people started dropping cans and bottles off at her grandma's house. And her parents had told her, whatever you get will match. First little efforts, to raise money. And then she had a birthday party to raise money for AGS. She had all these blue cupcakes because that's kind of the color. It's in our genes, so the color is blue. And then this young girl spoke at the church. And afterwards, somebody came up to her mom and said, we were just given money after somebody passed away. They said, we're not to spend it on ourselves. Their wish was that we give it to somebody in need. And so they're thinking it's a couple $1,000. It was $100,000. Yeah. So we got with Dr. Vandiver and we're like, okay, how do we use this for AGS? How does this work? And so in her wisdom, we set up this nonprofit And that was all pro bono from a lawyer in Maryland whose kids also went to the school I was teaching at. You know, you look at all these things that fell into place just perfectly. So he got us set up as a profit. So he gets us set up as a nonprofit, and we put this money into a bank account. And then Dr. Vandiver ended up moving to Philadelphia. And so because of the research base at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, that $100,000 plus the t-shirt sales and those grassroots things that I had been doing started a drug trial in 2015. So like to think that in 2012, there was not even genetic testing. Nobody heard of this disease really in the United States to 2015. You're starting a drug trial, and drug trials on kids are not easy to do because it's a kid, you know, there's different rules. And we had battled with NIH for years about trying this drug trial, and, you know, Abby never benefited from it, but all of these other kids, and we had an AGS conference in 2019, you know, when we first met in 2008, there were maybe 5 to 10 families. 2019, the picture was ginormous. It was just huge. Like, I can't even tell you how many families were there because it just, and social media helped, you know, we got a Facebook community. So that allows us to be international. Initially we started out just taking care of North and South America. And now our Facebook group is almost 1,000 people all over the world where we connect and parents can ask questions. After newly diagnosed, you know, like my baby's crying all the time and they're not 2 months old. It's like, oh yeah, that's normal, you know, but you don't know that in the beginning because doctors don't necessarily have that. And we actually, our vice president just recently worked with the hospital to create a brochure to give families and to give doctors that outlines our disease, the symptoms, you know, the specialists that they need. So that parents in different countries were working on translating it into multiple languages so that they can hand that or give them a PDF and just say, hey, like, here's a resource, because.
That is just wild to think that, unfortunately, at Abby's young age, you weren't able to discern what it was. And you were lucky, I'm guessing, that there was somebody on another continent that you could fly a blood sample to.
Yes.
Who could come back with an answer. And thankfully, he or she was able to provide the answer. But to think of what has changed over the course of the last 15 or so years, it's quite exponential, it sounds like.
Yeah.
The ability for them to figure out, oh, this is what it is, as though, you know, yeah, never mind that 15 years ago, we were flying blood samples across the ocean to see it being figured out. Now it's like, it's popping up everywhere.
Right. And that's like some people are saying, you know, my baby's 2.5 months old and we finally got the diagnosis. And I'm thinking, like, people have waited years prior to the technology being there, you know. But Dr. Vandiver telling me one time that, you know, the good thing about the genetic testing is that, you know, at an early age that these children have the disease. But she said the hard thing as a doctor is telling a parent who looks like they're holding a healthy child, hey, this is what your child has, and this is what's getting ready to come. And she said that was really difficult for her as a physician to have to sit down with parents and tell them, like, this is what to expect with this baby. And, you know, I that's something that I hadn't thought about, like, and we're still looking, you know, pushing for newborn screenings. Right now, we're working with Luna to create a patient registry. So it would be all anonymous, but yet there's all this data of all of the symptoms, the onset, you know, things that parents have noticed, and just making it a place where doctors and researchers and scientists who are interested in AGS can look. You know, our foundation has gotten enough money now where we can do small grants. We're looking for, okay, is there a doctor, like just recently we awarded one to a doctor in Italy who's been doing research in AGS, but she's going to look at why does it vary so much? why do some kids have it so much more severe than others? And is it because of which gene is mutated? Does that have any, you know? So it's awesome to see that it's not just something happening in our country now, but we're reaching out as a as an advocacy group all over the world to get answers.
Do you happen to know parents who have special needs children, maybe at church or in your homeschool co-op or in your community? Or are you the parent of a special needs child and maybe you're feeling overwhelmed? Well, we are parents of special needs children, and we've been in the community for a very, very long time. And we have noticed over the many years that we've been involved that there are quite a few needs that special needs families have. And so we are looking to provide a supportive community that can connect overwhelmed special needs parents who are lonely and need resources with other people who understand their struggle, and to bring resources that can help your child to reach their fullest potential. So I wanted to let you know that we're going to begin having a membership community to connect the families who need the support. It's oftentimes very difficult to find support in our local communities because many times our families are not able to get out and about like we used to before the days of these extra special challenges. But from home, with the blessing of online internet communities now, we can still find and create the support that we need. And so Steve and I wanted to make an announcement that we are going to begin one of these communities very soon. And so if you happen to know any special needs families, or if you are one yourself and you also know other families, please spread the message that throughout this podcast, we have all sorts of episodes appropriate for families with typical children, families with advanced children, and also families with special needs children. And we pour our hearts and souls into trying to find the very best resources from doctors and therapists and specialists who can come and support, all the way to parents who just share their experience, because we know what it feels like to have somebody journeying alongside of us. So please spread the message, share with others, and as more details are available, we will begin to put them out here on the podcast. We'll also be putting them into our community. And if you have any questions for us regarding any of the special needs, I don't know, any questions that you have that you might want us to consider making into an episode, then please use the SpeakPipe link in the description that you'll see with this episode and send us a message. We would be so honored to try and answer your question or bring on a guest who can answer your question, because that is our passion. So we are here to serve, and it makes us so joyful when we are given that opportunity. So thank you so much. I keep hearing over and over from you, I need more energy. I need more clarity. I really just want to start to feel good. Oh, I remember those days so clearly, and I'm so glad I'm not there anymore. I am so excited to share with you my best kept secret for how I'm able to maintain the energy level and the clarity level that I need to be able to homeschool my kids, work on this podcast, and accomplish the things in life that I love. I have discovered that there is a scientifically proven herbal activator that is backed by so much independent research that even a skeptic like me was able to be convinced. It reduces inflammation. The inventor of this won a major award that incredible scientists like the Wright brothers, Marie Curie, and Alexander Graham Bell also won. It's absolutely amazing, considered to be a medical breakthrough that is not sold in stores. However, you are able to access it through the link that I have here in this description of this podcast, or you can go to familysuccess.lifevantage.com. If you want to ask me any questions about this, I'd absolutely love it. Please just go to the link in the same description for SpeakPipe, and you can reach out to me there, or come and join the Facebook group and let's talk about this. This is one of my passion topics. This is something that, of very rare few things that I can stand behind, I stand behind this one. And I would love to talk to you about it and share with you how it has impacted my life as a mom and how it's impacted my children's lives. It has truly changed us for the better. Go and check it out. So I want to ask you, because you, the last time I got to see you and hug you was very dark, sad times, because Abby had just passed.
Yes.
And even since she passed, you have continued to inspire and bring joy in the pain and the grief, which I've learned from you, even just through what you post and through our conversations, so much about dealing with grief. And I'm so grateful to you. And so I'm hoping you would be willing to share a little bit of that journey too with people who are listening today, because whether someone has lost a child or might lose a child or has experienced another form of grief, you've done so much in that space that I know can benefit other people.
Yeah. So yeah, grief and child loss is not natural. You know, that's one thing that I've definitely learned. And, you know, the way that I approach other people in their loss is very different too, because, you know, before I had lost Abby, before we lost Abby, it was, oh, that's heartbreaking. You know, you hear the news, but you don't really empathize the same way. And so, you know, we learned very quickly that grief is a hard journey. It is difficult. And that, you know, Dave and Riley and I all experienced it very differently because of our relationship with Abby. You know, we don't know what it was like to be a sibling. Dave and I had neither one of us had lost a sibling. So for Riley, that was very different. And I think the difficulty for her was that she was off at college for a lot of that, you know, so she was used to coming home on breaks and seeing Abby. And it would be like she's getting ready to come home on a break and she would have what we called a grief ambush. You know, she would lose it because I got to walk in her room and say hello, but I can't because she's not there, you know. And so that part was very different for her. Plus, she was away from us. And so we couldn't see how she was handling it. But I'm so thankful that when she had those moments, it did not matter what time of day or night it was, she picked up the phone and called us, you know, and she would just be crying on the phone. But she knew she could call us because she knew we got it, you know. And then, you know, Abby passed away in November of 2019. So that was hard because it was right before Thanksgiving, right before Christmas, and there really aren't any resources out there during the holidays for people who are going through grief, which I was really angry about. I'm like, that seems like the time people need it the most, you know? I didn't understand that. But Abby had also been on hospice care prior to her passing. And that was one benefit of hospice, was that we received 13 months of free grief counseling with their counselor. And at first, you know, Dave was, I'm not going, you know, military, law enforcement, like I can't go talk to a counselor, that's going to mess with my job. But I'm like, grief is totally different. We got to the hospice office to go in there and he said, I'm not going in. I said, fine, stay in the car, but I'm going to talk to this lady, you know? And he's like, okay. So we went inside and she just let us tell our story, you know, share part of it. And we walked out of there and Dave said, oh, that was so good. Like she is so good, you know? And we could not recommend enough how going to get that support. And so then we started Grief Share in February of 2020, because we knew we needed help through the grief. And of course we got to meet in person for a month and then COVID hit. And let me tell you that COVID and grief was horrible. It was a combination because you're isolated. It's just Dave and I in the house both trying to get through our grief, which was not pretty. You know, there were a lot of arguing and yelling because we were both just hurt and we just didn't have any outlet. You know, we're sitting in the house. And so one of the churches in the area decided they were going to do Grief Share on Zoom. And so we got an email about it and I'm like, yes, you know, let's do this. Mm-hmm. And so we finished Grief Share through Zoom. And so that was nice because you were talking to other people who were going through grief, not feeling as isolated during COVID because of that. But this church also realized that, hey, we're not getting out of this isolation thing soon. And normally when you have a grief share, you offer it once in a year. And then, you know, other churches offer it so that people can go anytime during the year, but the same church doesn't do it repeatedly. But they said, you know what, we're going to do this again. So next week we're starting in session one on Zoom. You know, if you know anybody who needs to join us, let's do it. And so I did it a second time. Dave did some of it, but he was also going back to work during that time. And so at that point, things were getting lifted a little bit. And so we decided as a grief share group, once it was over and we'd only ever met through the computer, we were going to go to Panera and we were going to have dinner together. And we did, you know, and it was just so great because you just feel so connected to those people, even though you're all experiencing somewhat different losses. But the counselor at hospice was also wise enough to realize that grief share or grief groups that they did at hospice were very different for families who lost children. And so she created a group of child loss. And so we met on Zoom as well. And it was me and Dave and two other moms. And we still have a group text to this day, even though we moved away, we would go to dinner at least once a month. All of us lost our children in October or November, and they all had birthdays in February and March. And so like the fall and their birthdays were always horrible. So we were always checking in on each other because you just know those anniversaries are hard. And again, like being around other people who sort of get it, you know, was very much like, and it's still very important to me. I want to be a grief share facilitator. In our life group here, there's a gentleman who lost his wife and another couple who also lost their daughter. And so we're actually looking at starting a ministry at our church so that when people come in with loss, because we have different types of loss, then we can walk beside them while they're waiting for a grief share, while they're waiting for counseling, while they're trying to find resources, and just come alongside them during that part of their life. And I do want to touch on to like the hospice part of Abby's life, because that's something we chose for our family. You know, not everybody feels comfortable with other people coming into their home like that. But for us, we wanted to be in control of how her final days and hours were going to go. We didn't want strangers around. We didn't, you know, we wanted it to be how we wanted it for her. And so hospice for children is different. You can still choose to take them to the hospital to get treated, you know, than for adults. And so, you know, if an infection rose up, we took her to the hospital. And then she had her last hospitalization in July of 2019. And then started having a lot of digestive issues, you know. And so we chose the hospice route. And we're so thankful for that because, you know, Dave was in bed with Abby when she passed. He had fallen asleep. And I had went to lay on the couch for just a few minutes. And then the nurse came in, you know, and she said, I think she's, you know, she's getting ready to go. And it was just, we were able to control all of that, you know. And I had a very wise friend, Terry Simon, tell me that no matter what decision we made up to that point regarding Abby's medical care was not going to change the moment that God had ordained for her to take her final breath. You know, and that gave me such peace in the decisions that we had to make because it was like, she's right. You know, we can't carry the weight of, did we do the right thing or not? And that, like, I still share that with people all the time. Like, no matter what decision you're going to make, it's not going to change when God chooses, it's their time. So, yeah. And it's still like, I'm finding now, you know, we're 3 years out and July was very difficult for me this year, but that was also when we made the decision to stop giving her formula because her body was just reacting so horribly to being fed. And you think as a parent, you can't take away a basic need of your child. Like, how do you do that? But it was a family decision and it was Abby's medical team and it was the hospice team and it was a lot of conferencing and talking about, you know, what we don't know about this disease. And I think the thing too is like we had chose to have Abby's organs donated to research because her disease is so rare. And the morning she passed away, we knew her brain. We had registered that at the Maryland Brain Bank in 2015 when she was still living. And Dr. Vandiver was very sensitive about that conversation. She did not have it while Abby was in the room. She had a nurse take her to another room, and we had the discussion where Abby was not there so that we could start doing the paperwork and all of those things. And the morning that Abby passed away, Dr. Vandiver said, "Would you consider other organs?" And in my grief, or I don't know, I'm thinking it's maybe just a little bit of the heart, the lung, the liver, the kidneys. You know, not thinking they're taking the entire organ at the time, but that doesn't really matter at this point. And so they did. They took those other organs, and they were sent to Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And they did her autopsy, and Abby's medical team came to her burial at Arlington National Cemetery, which was phenomenal. But they got her autopsy report that day, and they said, you know, they waited a couple days because obviously they knew we had just gone through that. And they called and just said, "Hey, you know, her autopsy is a little complicated. We would like you guys to come in to Children's Hospital. Dr. Vandiver's coming in from Philadelphia, and we want to go over this with you." And so they scheduled us on a Friday afternoon, late, like the last appointment. And it was her medical team from Children's National, her neurologist, developmental pediatrician, complex care, all of those people, genetic doctor, and then Dr. Vandiver, who's doing the research into this disease, talked about those last few moments of Abby's life, those last, you know, decisions we had made to just do the Pedialyte and all of that stuff. And then Dr. Vandiver comes over with the autopsy, and the very first line says, "The most striking finding in this case is the presence of Hodgkin's lymphoma." Mm-hmm. So here we get hit with Abby had cancer. We had no clue. It wouldn't have changed the way we treated her, mm-hmm. but it was like she was still teaching even in her death. And there was a article published in a medical journal last September as her being the first case of Aicardi-Goutier syndrome and Hodgkin's lymphoma, and how we chose to treat it, but how parents might want to think if their child is having these digestive issues, that maybe it's not just AGS, maybe you need a MRI, maybe you need a biopsy. Because, you know, my first question is, how did you miss this? And they had gone back and looked at all of her chest x-rays because there were tumors found in her heart and her lungs. So their thought is it was probably attacking her digestive system because it was soft tissue. But we don't know because we didn't think that, oh, she's got cancer. We thought, oh, it's AGS, and the brain gut connection just wasn't there. And so, you know, that again has just spoken to the medical community and the disease community that when we're practicing medicine, it's not always the way that you think it is.
Yeah. Wow. She has left such a legacy, and you guys are carrying on her memory. And I don't know, you're just bringing such a gift. And yes, to the AGS community, but I mean, Stephanie, to so many other people too, so many other people.
Well, and I think part of that, you know, is like I said, the sharing of the grief, that it's so hard. Like, I don't think people are transparent enough, you know, like I feel like in our country, people are like, oh, you know, it's done. And everybody else goes back to their regular life, but that person is still walking in such a dark place, you know, and yes, you know, like we moved here to Texas as empty nesters. Now it was the first military move we've made without kids. And one of Dave's biggest worries was, what kind of identity is my wife going to have now? Because she was always Abby's mom, you know, and that was a big part. I was 24/7 her caregiver until we got nursing. So like, you know, that's who I was. And so trying to find, and I wanted to do something that was grief related and advocacy related when we got here, but because it wasn't professional, my experience wasn't professional. Most places are like, just dismiss you, you know? And I'm like, but life experience has a lot. I mean, what we went through in her life is more than most people could even imagine. And And I've been blessed to be back in Christian education here and be able to share my story, you know, with families here, because we thought, how do we share Abby here? You know, when people meet us for the first time and they're like, oh, do you have kids? My answer is yes, we have two girls. You know, our oldest is Riley. She's living in Virginia. She's doing this. And I say, and then our youngest, Abby, had a rare genetic disease and she passed away at age 17 in 2019. And, you know, of course the response is, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. And some people are genuinely like, tell me more about her. Like, I just recently met a lady at our church who's on staff when I was doing this Kids Eat Free event. And I told her that you guys had reached out to me about the podcast. And she's like, oh, I love podcasts. What is it? And she downloaded it on the spot. Like, I can't wait to hear more about your daughter's story on this podcast, you know? So I was like, oh, you know, this is just going to reach a whole different audience with Abby's story too, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
It will. There's a lot of different types of families who are listening in. Special needs, typical grandparents, you know, so we have a whole range, but not one of those people can escape the sense of, I might know somebody like that, or just simply that story was very impactful. Mm-hmm. And it's opened my eyes to it.
I think just, again, being in community with other people and knowing that life is not the same for everybody. You know, I used to always say that the world is set up for a healthy family of four. You know, when you look at vacations, it's always parents and kids do this for free, but we could not take advantage of those situations. You know, we never did big family vacations because we couldn't. You know, I'd say the biggest, Abby did do we did a Make-A-Wish Disney cruise in 2012, and that was, again, that tip was given to me by another special needs family who did the exact same thing, because they had older, healthy children. And they thought, instead of having to navigate a Disney park and get to a first aid station or get on the tram and get back to your hotel, if you're on a cruise ship, you just go back to your room if Abby's overstimulated, right? Riley could still run around and do whatever she wanted, because where's she going to go? She's on a boat, you know? So she had like the best vacation because she had just turned 13. She could go to the teen club, you know, or her and Dave could go do things. And if Abby needed something or was just, it was too hot or whatever, we could go back to the room and chill for a little bit and then go to whatever event they had. And of course they did tons. I mean, Make-A-Wish does stuff, but then Disney does over the top stuff for Make-A-Wish families. And so it was like, and we were only gone for like 3 days, but it was the best family vacation, because we would never have dreamed of doing anything like that on our own, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, you learn from other families who have been there. And the same with Abby's burial. It was that same military family who said, you know, because she's special needs and because she's a minor and because of your husband's service, she can be buried at Arlington with you and Dave. And it was like, we had never heard that before, you know? And so knowing that she's in that place where we're going to be one day, you know, among heroes. And I think, you know, she had her own battle to fight, you know, very different than most of the people that are buried at Arlington, but that girl was a warrior, you know, in her own right.
It's true.
It is true.
I mean, I can't count the number of times that I heard, she's got to have this surgery or this procedure or whatever. But I never, ever saw that kid without a smile on her face.
Yeah. And I mean, there are, so many things. And I remember, like, in my Facebook memories, you know, which is sometimes good and sometimes bad, you see like how many diagnoses she had, how many medications she was on, how many times a day she took those medications. And it's like, it blows your mind, blows my mind now looking back and thinking, how in the world did we do that? You know, I mean, it was definitely not us and our strength. I mean, there's no way. It's just, it's not humanly possible. But I think the world is better. I do think that in this country, we're lacking in home health care for kids and how that whole industry is handled. I mean, we had to get investigative news involved in Maryland because Abby was overdosed 3 times on a controlled medication. And when I contacted lawyers, we were basically told because nothing catastrophic happened, they wouldn't take on the case. So somebody has to die before you can have good health care for your kid in your home. Like, that's not okay. And so again, that was another time when I was like, nope, not doing it. And, you know, we fought for that. And that's an industry that I don't think will ever, you know, it's gonna take a lot of people to get something like that to change. But
yeah, Abby has left a legacy that has made such a difference. And I know it will continue to make such a difference. And I don't know, I just feel so honored to know you guys, to have witnessed your journey, to have known Abby. Mm-hmm. So honored to have known Abby. And I'm just so grateful to you for sharing with everybody all of this. So
we had the benefit of seeing it firsthand for abortion and learn from it mm-hmm. and to put it into practice into our own lives with our own special needs journey.
Yes.
And so we benefited from it in more than one way.
We did.
The people in the audience, you get to benefit from the entirety of the story,
mm-hmm.
But you can spread that. You can pass that on and other people can continue to bless others as it goes out. Yes. So as we mm-hmm. come into the close of today's program, we'd like to ask what we call our signature question, that question we ask of all of our guests. And that is if you would give us one thing, a piece of advice, a secret of some sort, from either your personal experience or your professional expertise that would be a blessing for families, something that they could institute rather easily in their homes, in their families.
I think the biggest thing is knowing you're not alone. I think you need to find out, are there support groups in your community for your child's diagnosis, syndrome, disease, whatever it is that they have, but also on a larger scale, social media. I mean, like I said, our Facebook group now is international. You know, find people who are walking in your shoes, because when you feel like you're not alone, that lifts such a weight. And then people share their experiences, their wisdom, their tips and tricks as you navigate this new road, you know, and then that helps you build your community and networking with other doctors that you may not be physically close to, but you can reach out to on email and say, okay, like I just got this diagnosis for my child. I mean, families travel all over the world to go to Philadelphia to see Dr. Jennifer because they know she is like the person for this disease. And so not being alone and reaching out to find those resources or having doctors point families in those directions like Dr. Vandiver did, so that parents, because sometimes you're just so overwhelmed because you get this diagnosis, you go through that grieving process, you don't know where to start, you don't know how to look for it. And so, you know, just having somebody connect you with somebody else so you're not alone.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Absolutely. So just in case there's a family who's recently gotten an AGS diagnosis, where can they go to find the foundation that you guys have established?
So we do have the Facebook group. I even have to look sometimes because there's a private group for just like families. So because we share sensitive information on there, but then we also have just Aicardi Goutier Syndrome Advocacy Association or AGSAA on Facebook. And that will, you know, link you to the latest research and give you ways to contact our board. There's resources on there in different folders for families and things like that. And then I'm on Facebook too. If people want to just reach out to me personally, Stephanie Campbell Weinberg, I'm always happy to answer questions.
Okay. Stephanie, thank you so much. I'll make sure I get that into the description as well so that somebody who might be driving while listening can just go to the description later and click the link.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Well, thank you guys. This time.
Thank you very much. It's quite a blessing to talk with you again, for us to catch up with you a little bit.
Yeah.
And now for the audience, around the U.S. and
in the world.
Some cases around the world to hear, and hopefully, I'm sure it will be a blessing for them as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys. I'm so excited because once I learned you were launching your podcast, I went on and downloaded it and oftentimes listen to it while I'm driving. So awesome. I was just so excited when you reached out and asked about this because, you know, we don't want Abby's legacy to disappear. So thank you. Yeah,
absolutely. Our honor and pleasure. Thank you. And anybody who is on YouTube, you will eventually find Stephanie and this interview on YouTube as well. So check that out. All right. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening and spending time with us today.
If you know anyone who could benefit from my mom's podcast, please share it and leave a review so others can find us too.
See you next time.